This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas has a problem with teachers having inappropriate relationships with students. State leaders have called the situation a plague, and the number of Texas Education Agency investigations into these inappropriate relationships shows that this trend is getting worse each year. In the 2016 fiscal year, the number of investigations was 222. In 2017, it was 306. And so far for the year, which ends on August 31st, it's 417. I spoke yesterday with Doug Phillips, the director of educator investigations at the TEA. He has the job to catch these predator teachers. Latest numbers, not good, 417 investigations opened up by the TEA looking at educators in improper relationships. When you say investigations have opened up, what does that mean?
Well, that means that we've received a report of misconduct, and that misconduct fits the parameters for what we consider to be an inappropriate relationship between an educator and a student, to the point that we believe that it may or may not result in the sanctioning of an educator's certificate. And so we open an investigation to determine whether or not that person's certificate should be sanctioned.
I mean, does that mean that there were 417 improper relationships, or y'all were just told to check them out?
No, those are reports of inappropriate behavior, inappropriate relationships. So those are individual reports.
There was a new law that went into effect last September that we were told would have an effect in trying to reduce the numbers. Any sign that that law had any effect on what's been called a statewide plague?
That law, when it was passed, had really two parts of it. The main thrust of it was to impact inappropriate relationships. The other part of it was to impact the reporting of inappropriate relationships. There are quite a few things in there that are aimed at encouraging superintendents to report inappropriate relationships and other misconduct. So I think at least some of this large increase can be attributed to more reports by superintendents that maybe in the past they may not have reported. It may not have quite risen to the level they felt was something we should have looked at. But now, due to clarification in law and other things that came about, they're reporting a whole lot more of everything, and specifically inappropriate relationships.
So the new law told superintendents and principals that if they were aware of an improper relationship and they did not report it, then they could face criminal penalty themselves, right?
Criminal and financial penalties.
We should consider that this may have motivated principals and superintendents to be more forthcoming in reporting these, and so we're seeing that that could account for this increase.
At least some of that increase. You know, as I'm sure you've noticed, the trend has been in an upward direction in the past before this law was passed. So I don't doubt that if this law wouldn't have been passed, there would have been an increase. I just don't know that the increase would have been to the degree it's going to end up being by the time this fiscal year is over.
In the last legislative session, there was also talk of trying to give you more resources, more funding, and more personnel. Did that ever happen?
We did get some funding. We hired two additional investigators, and they've certainly come in handy with this increase in caseload.
So that's 9 total?
Yes, 9 investigators total.
Do y'all have a budget now for going into the field to do investigations?
No. In fact, as the number of calls or a number of reports have increased, it would be even really more impossible for us to go into the field. We still operate under the same kind of standard operating procedure of them coming into us.
So all of your investigators are in Austin?
Yes.
Would being able to go into the field, would that help in trying to determine the veracity and the details of what happened and help the students?
I don't know that it would help to have our investigators go on site. Really, the school districts being the primary and first place this is reported have a lot more resources than we do. They're able to conduct, in the most cases, sufficient investigations. If they discover that it's a criminal investigation, then they involve, obviously, whatever local law enforcement there is. By the time it gets to us, and we wouldn't, especially when it's a criminal investigation, we wouldn't want to put ourselves in a position where we could be interfering with that investigation. So I don't know if it would be, I don't believe it would be helpful if we sent our investigators actually there. We can require and subpoena witnesses if we need to. We try not to ever do that. The educators required to cooperate with us, and districts are required to cooperate with us and have been doing a really good job of that as well.
Of the 417 investigations that were opened up in your office, how many of them resulted in criminal charges?
I couldn't tell you. With inappropriate relationships, a certain percentage of them do result in criminal charges. A lot of them are just more inappropriate behavior, the kind of the grooming stage. And I'm sure you've looked up the penal code and the definition of what makes it a criminal, at least what we believe to be the criminal behavior. And that usually involves sex between the educator and the student or sexual contact. A lot of our cases are educators who are, for all practical purposes, attempting to date the student. Most of the time, it starts with texts and that sort of thing. For us, it doesn't really matter if it's a criminal charge or not, unless it gets all the way to the point to where there's a conviction. And if there's a conviction, then our case will basically end because of operation of law, we're able to revoke them. So we don't track those separately. They all kind of go into the same pot for us.
Do you know how many criminal charges were filed against teachers in Texas for sexual contact with students last year?
No, I don't.
Under the new law, it's now illegal for any teacher to have a contact with the student, even if they're inside or outside of their school district, because previously that was a loophole, right?
Correct.
So how has that changed things?
I think it just makes it a lot clearer for what needs to be reported. I think really what it makes it clear for our prosecutors out there, DAs, that loophole's gone. They don't have to try to figure out, what student was at what district and where the educator was, because it certainly caused some confusion in the past, and that was really, we felt like that was a really unnecessary change. Just basically saying if you're an educator in the state of Texas, you can't have this inappropriate sexual relationship with any students in the state of Texas, regardless of whether they're at your campus or your district. Because prior to that last iteration, it used to be that they could be within the same district, but at a different campus, and it wasn't illegal. So that was the first change, and then this last change was they because then they said, well, if they were in a different district, you couldn't charge them, and now they've gotten rid of that.
But these students were still minors.
Yes.
Come on. I mean, they're minors.
Yeah. It wasn't something that I thought really made a lot of sense, and ultimately the legislature agreed.
When you do your investigations, are we talking about all schools in Texas, or are you just talking about traditional public schools?
Traditional and charter schools. All public schools are covered by this.
But not private schools?
Their students are protected, but they're not required necessarily to report it.
Do you ever typically investigate private schools?
We do not investigate private schools, no.
Walk the listener through how this works. How are you typically notified to open up an investigation? Go through the steps, if you don't mind.
So we are typically notified in one of two ways. One, we are either notified by a criminal history report, which is received through Department of Public Service, through their clearinghouse, that notifies us that an educator was arrested for, any sort of crime that rates them receiving in the clearinghouse, in this case, an appropriate relationship. We would initiate a case based on that arrest. Or, more typically, in these cases, we are notified by the school district in what we call a 249 report, which is based on Chapter the Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 249, which requires superintendents to report misconduct under certain circumstances to the State Board for Educator Certification, which TEA, Texas Education Agency, actually, we provide the work for that. They report that information to us. We determine whether or not it should be opened as an investigation. The investigation is opened and assigned to an investigator. The investigator contacts the individual and then notifies them that we've received a report of misconduct, gives them the ability to, at that point, respond to that notification. Generally, in these cases, we will immediately put a what we refer to as a flag or a notification on their virtual teacher certificate that says that they're under review by TEA. We then will contact the reporting district or law enforcement or whoever is involved in this and ask for reports. If it is a law enforcement initiated report, or even if it was initiated by a district and there's an ongoing law enforcement action investigation, we will wait until that investigation is completed. Once we get to a point to where that criminal investigation is completed or the school district's investigation is completed, and we've requested all the information by subpoena, we take all that information, we look at it. The last step we generally do in these is we will send a notification again to the educator and ask them and let them know that they have the opportunity to come in to us and discuss this matter with us, give us their version of what happened. They can write in, or in some cases they aren't required to do anything, but we give them the opportunity to talk to us. Once we have all that information in the investigation stage, we will offer them a settlement, an agreed order, an administrative sanction maybe. Offered, and that can include either a reprimand, a suspension, or a voluntary surrender. We may administratively close it. We may determine there wasn't enough information or evidence there to proceed. If they accept that order, that ends the case for TEA. If they decline that offer and then there's a pending sanction that we've offered them, we send them to our legal division, who will kind of go through their own process, which includes taking them to the State Office of Administrative Hearings and having a hearing officer make a decision in the case. And then in some circumstances, that may go in front of the State Board for Educator Certification for final determination.
This is while there's typically a parallel criminal investigation going on?
If there's a criminal investigation going on, we don't really we toll that, we put it in suspense, our case, until that criminal investigation is completed.
You have the power of subpoena, I thought you heard you say?
We do, an administrative subpoena.
Does that mean you're able to get their cell phones? And
no, that'll be done in a criminal court. All basically the administrative subpoena, we're able to obtain records from the school district and on closed criminal investigations, which is one reason we wait until it's over. We're not able to get them when the criminal investigation's ongoing. Once it's closed, we're able to obtain their documents and then court documents. And in some cases, it does allow us to actually subpoena the individual if our legal department goes to a hearing on it.
With the cell phone information, it's pretty much all there, right?
Well, so that works in many ways. If we can get it, and a lot of times the school district will obtain that information for us, or if we're lucky, we'll get the parents of the victim student will provide us with that end of the cell phone information. Sometimes all you get is just, you can see that there were multiple calls made during times and dates when we don't believe they should be making those times and those calls. But now with the advent of things like Snapchat, and I haven't even no idea what is out there now, that really there is no record of, it's making it more difficult.
There's a grooming going on by the adult. You can see that in the text, but if they're using some of these WhatsApp or whatever else that's out there, they're able to get around that now.
As technology technology involves, I think it's getting more difficult to be tracked by law enforcement and everybody else.
And you said settlement. What does that mean by that? There's not like a financial settlement that goes off from TEA. What does that mean?
So it's just, and again, all TEA has authority over, and that's through SBEC, is the certificate. So the settlement is just, you agree that you should receive an inscribed reprimand, a reprimand on your certificate that says you've got some boundary issues, or we agree that you should be suspended for a certain period of time, or we agree that you should surrender your certificate and not teach in Texas again.
Is that doing enough to keep these teachers out of other classrooms, or is there, you know, moving around to other school districts, finding other jobs, and they don't know that this teacher has a history of violating those boundaries?
Well, if it's reported to us and we reach a point where there's a settlement and they were certified, then that will be on their virtual certificate. And their virtual certificate is the official certificate for educators in the state of Texas. And there shouldn't be any school districts out there that are hiring anyone without checking that virtual certificate. For one thing, just to see if they're certified in what they claim to be certified in. And the other is to see if there are any sort of sanctions against that individual certificate. The challenge for us now is of these individuals who are teachers, in quotes, and acting as a teacher that aren't certified. If they are not certified, we don't have jurisdiction over these people.
Is there a time limit that says that superintendents and principals have to notify that this is going on?
Yeah, it's 7 calendar days.
You told me you have 417 open investigations thus far for the year. We're coming up towards the end of the fiscal year for you when this closes out. Is there typically a surge, or do you expect it's going to be about this number?
We've all been kind of talking about how high this thing was going to go, and we may see another dozen or so come in. I think that's where it's going to stop. It'll be probably right in the 425 to 430 would be our guess, because now everybody's getting back to school. It typically will see a pretty good surge come end of school year, and then it kind of dies off while everybody's out of school and away through July and in the first part of August, and then we see a little bit, things kind of start returning back to normal end of August, and then gets going again in September.
That was Doug Phillips, the Director of Educator Investigations at the TEA. We're taking a break, and when we come back, we continue our conversation about inappropriate student-teacher relationships, and we open up the phone lines, 210-614-8980. The source continues in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a plague of inappropriate relationships in Texas between teachers and students. There is no circumstance where this is okay. The teacher is an adult in a position of trust and authority. The student is a minor. This is illegal, but it's happening at an alarming rate. There is evidence that frequently teachers who are caught crossing the line are not held to account. That needs to change. How can we do that? What do you want to see happening here in Texas to reduce the number of teachers and students having this type of inappropriate, illegal relationship? 210-614-8980. That's the number to call to join our conversation. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined now live with Julie Chang. She's a staff writer for the Austin American Statesman, and she's been writing extensively about this issue here in Texas. And we're joined by Paul Tapp. He's the managing attorney for the Association of Texas Professional Educators. Welcome both of y'all to The Source.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Well, Julie, let me check in with you first, and we'll go to Paul on this. What's your reaction to hearing that Texas is currently at 417 inappropriate relationships clocked at the TEA? It's expected to go up before the end of this fiscal year.
Well, can't say that I'm terribly surprised, just because when I had talked to TEA, shortly after the law passed last year, they had indicated that they were going to see a higher number of cases last year and could probably have a pretty good guess that they were going to have a higher number of cases this year. And I do agree with what, and it makes sense, you know, what Doug said, that, you know, there's probably heightened attention from the fact that legislators have been legislating this issue and making it a harsher punishment for not reporting. I think that does make an impact to some degree.
And Paul Tapp, your reaction?
I have to agree. I think there's a number of things that likely go into this, both the attention, just like Julie and Doug both said. I agree with that. I think that the changes in the law that have required reporting things that did not used to be required to report, and the changes that TEA has made to the rules that have greatly expanded the definition of what's considered inappropriate and what a teacher will lose their certificate for. The expansion of that has increased. I do have to admit, I agree with Doug. I don't think there's any way of us to know really what it is that happened, but I think that some of the changes, particularly social media, has created situations where there are opportunities, or no, that's the right word, but where teachers can find themselves or can do things that they wouldn't normally have done before, which certainly want to say, yes, I agree with you with what you said to begin with. One inappropriate relationship is one too many.
Right. But Paul Tapp, let's go over where you're coming from on this. You're with the Association of Texas Professional Educators, and your point of view here is tell me more.
Our position has always been, like I said, one inappropriate relationship is one too many. What I focus on myself the most, and we focus on, is trying to educate the educators, so that, number one, they know what it is that's prohibited. We've used the term inappropriate relationship a lot. Clearly, everyone knows that a sexual relationship is inappropriate. But the definition of that, as far as a teacher goes way beyond that. Doug mentioned, of course, the idea of texting or grooming a student. Understandably, TEA decided quite a long time ago that there is no reason we should wait until something actually happens. We need to get at this sooner. So they started, again, expanding the rules to prohibit, under what's termed under the law, soliciting a romantic relationship. The law actually requires TEA, as it stands now, to revoke an educator's certificate if it is found that they did something that would be considered not just having a relationship with a student, but soliciting a romantic relationship with a student. It's kind of hard to come up with a definition of that, but best one I've come up with so far is flirting. They do take this very seriously.
Yeah, so but flirting is one of those things that's hard to define. Mm-hmm. You know it when you see it, but what exactly is it? It's hard to say. I do know that they are telling teachers now, do not engage with students in social media. Do not do anything in that world that can be read in any sort of type of ways. And we're going to take another break. We'll be right back. We're going to continue talking about student-teacher relationships. Number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Back after this.
Mexican food traditions are passed down through the generations.
Enchiladas, rice with chicken, fideo with carne picada.
A project at the University of Texas at San Antonio has collected recipes from its housekeeping staff and incorporated them into a special collection of Mexican cookbooks. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source, and we're talking about student-teacher relationships. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. David has called in, and let's get him on the air. And Dave, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a question just in terms of where things cross the line. In terms of, I have a situation where my daughter plays soccer on a high school girls' team, and the coach makes some remarks that are questionable in terms of, the females, and I've reported this. And is this something that's just tolerable, or is there something that is actionable?
Can you give us a little more detail?
Just making remarks about certain parts of female anatomy, not explicitly, but alluding to it, and certainly makes the girls uncomfortable, or at least, the few that I'm aware of that happened on two occasions.
And who did you report it to?
To the principal.
And their reaction?
They investigated, but because it's a personnel matter, I'm not privy to that unless, I guess, if I would have to take it to the district level or something. I don't know. It's like you report it, and then that's all.
Do you feel like this was handled to your satisfaction?
Well, initially, I mean, it's occurred. There's a third incident now where I've had to make a report on it. And the first one, I was willing to say, okay, well, they're learning, but still, it's not. I know it's not acceptable. It's not professional behavior. I would not expect that in a workplace or in a setting with young people, especially females with a male.
And just to be clear, this is a teacher who works for the public school.
Yeah, public school district.
All right.
Yes.
David, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. Julie Chang, staff writer for the Austin American Statesman. Any reaction?
I guess my reaction would be is whether this would be considered a criminal misconduct versus something that Texas Education Agency could sanction the teacher over, sanction his or her license over. The criminal code, and Paul can probably definitely see to this in more details and see as the legal background, is a lot more narrower than what TEA operates under when deciding whether to sanction a license. So, I mean, it seems like maybe going to TEA first to see what they can do or get their advice on whether this is considered misconduct could be of use.
Right. So let me go to Paul Tapp on this, managing attorney for the Association of Texas Professional Educators. And it seems like, Paul, from what you're telling me from before, is that you understand that obviously, clearly, there are lines that are not to be crossed, but sometimes it's difficult to tell, which lines are which lines. In this instance, you may say, well, if the coach is saying things that's inappropriate, the principal probably should pull him aside and say, listen, coach, you can't talk that way. Straighten him out and then let it go, right? Or do you think that this person should have a TEA investigation brought up on him?
Well, and I'm hesitant, of course, to get too specific.
So we're in a hypothetical.
What I would say to David, who called in, I certainly would, first of all, I want to say I'm sorry you're having to call in about dealing with a situation like that in the first place. Second, I would definitely follow up. If not with the principal, go up to, the principal supervisor or the superintendent. If you do not feel like you understand or are comfortable with the situation, this isn't a time to sit back and just, not do anything. I would follow up with the district's administration on that. As far as what administration should do with it, they certainly are required under the rules to investigate it. And depending on, not just what they find, honestly, the reporting requirement depends on what the allegation is, depends on whether there is reason to believe, which even just a report can create a reason to believe. So it is, again, I'm hesitant to say what would really be required in a specific case that I don't know about, but I will tell you the rules have been designed where reporting is the default. That SBEC wants to know. I will tell you, Doug Phillips wants to know that there is an allegation out there. They take this very seriously and have developed the rules to make it clear, just like what you were talking about before, where they have increased the sanctions on administrators who fail to report. I'll just give one real quick example. Came up in a recent conference. There was a superintendent who had gotten notice that a teacher had engaged in some kind of inappropriate conduct. I honestly don't know exactly what it is. The superintendent reported it to law enforcement, but failed to report it to the State Board for Educator Certification. Came up later, they'd failed to do that. That went through that whole process. Doug was explaining about what they do. Their initial recommendation was that the superintendent be reprimanded for failing to report this to the state board. Again, he had reported it to law enforcement. The state board revoked his certification simply for failing to report that. Now, that may have been something that they were sending out as a warning to all other superintendents that we take this seriously. But I think it definitely can be taken as a very good example. They do take this very seriously.
Right. When we're seeing the high number of instances here in the state of Texas, and we can look at this 417 number that we're seeing from the TEA, or we can look at all the headlines of teachers mm-hmm. who are doing so much, you know, who are in physical sexual relationships with their minor students, something needs to be done. And we got to draw a line and say zero tolerance. And then we look at the case that our caller David brought up. And you can say, and one point of view is like, well, the teacher is just is saying stupid things. And another point of view would be is this is a teacher that is grooming students or seeing who's vulnerable and who's open to his advances. And I think but the point of view that we probably should be adopting is that this is not acceptable and that needs to be stopped. Right, Paul?
I agree entirely. And like I said, the actual law that is on the books at State Board for Educator Certification requires them to revoke the certificate for anyone they found to have just been grooming. Again, like Doug said, the only thing they have jurisdiction over is the certificate. So that's the only thing they can do. So it is basically their own death penalty. I mean, this is the only thing we can control, but we're going to kill it if we find out that even we think you have done this. I will tell you, this is, you know, I've been dealing with this for a long time. And you kind of mentioned before, it seems like it's a fuzzy standard, what's wrong, what's right. One of the things we really try and do is educate so that teachers understand where they need to be careful. You know, what they need to be careful of. Everybody knows you cannot have a sexual relationship with a student. I don't think that anyone doesn't know that. Why that continues to happen, that I don't think anyone knows. And that we could really use some resources to find out why it is that this keeps happening, even though the penalties have gotten so severe for it.
Yeah, that's I don't think we were able to come up with that answer today. That's something mm-hmm. beyond us. But we can try to look at what's happening in the state of Texas to sanction, punish teachers who do cross that line. So Julie Chang, staff writer for the Austin American Statesman, you've written about the criminal element as well as what the TEA does. And tell us, it seems like you're finding that there aren't as many criminal prosecutions as you would expect for the number of TEA actions. Is that right?
Yes. So what I did over a year-long dive into this issue is that I requested from the Texas Education Agency all cases of teachers who were sanctioned on their teaching licenses for inappropriate relationship with a student. And then I whittled that down even further to those who lost their licenses, either they were revoked or if they voluntarily surrendered it. And so between January 2010 and December 2016, I found that 686 teachers in Texas lost their teaching licenses as a result of allegations of impropriety with a student. And then of those 686 teachers, about 46% of them were actually charged with the crime. And the most common charge was improper relationship between an educator and student, which is a felony. And so, you know, some of the reasons why, you know, teachers weren't charged was just that the penal code really is saying that inappropriate relationship with a student involves usually sex or online solicitation of sex. So things like flirting and like some of those gray area issues or concerns don't quite fall within the penal code, so prosecutors can't really do much with it. So that's one of the issues. And another issue, and this is true for cases where there's a victim who's been who's a victim of abuse of power or anything along those lines, or sexual misconduct, a victim sometimes find it hard to cooperate with authorities on this, whether they, you know, fear authority, especially if they're a child, or they, you know, have some sort of, they develop some sort of relationship in their mind to protect their, you know, abuser. Things like that could prevent charges from being carried out. And then also you're talking about jury too. So if you have a teacher who's super young, you know, right out of college, 22-year-old, and develops a relationship with a 17-year-old, that's still considered a crime, but then the jury might not want to, you know, deliver a sentence or a conviction.
Sure, and that gets to a point of, has this become normalized? Have we become accepting of this? At least this is hearing about student-teacher relationships, sexual relationships, is now not uncommon. We'll keep talking about this when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It's no longer unusual for school employees to be charged with inappropriate student relationships. Frequently, we see these stories in the 5 o'clock newscast or in the local paper about a teacher who was caught having a sexual relationship with a student. How did this happen? Didn't the teacher realize that this was something that could send him to jail, was a violation of trust? And were there other people involved at the school who knew about it, who didn't step up and say, this has to stop? What do we need to do about this as a society to rein this in? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Yvonne is on the line. Yvonne, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
I just had a question. I was wondering, under the Texas Education Agency, who is under their jurisdiction? Is it charter schools, public schools, and private schools, or is it only public schools?
Yvonne, thank you for calling in. And Julie Chang, can you help us with that? Staff writer for the Austin American Statesman.
It's public schools, and charter schools and need to be specified in that they are public schools, but they're privately operated. And then, of course, you have traditional ISDs and their campuses, and those are what we typically consider public schools. And for the most part, no, TEA has no jurisdiction over private schools in the state of Texas. That's usually made very clear by lawmakers.
Right. So what that brings up this issue of the teacher's certificate. And the teaching certificate is kind of like your license to become a public school teacher in Texas, but charter schools, which are able to operate under more relaxed rules, you can teach there without a teacher's certificate. You certainly don't need one if you're at a private school. And then there are schools that are called schools of innovation, and I think maybe they can get around having teachers who are not yet certified as well. Is that right, Julie Chang?
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, I'm not sure of the count of how many non-certified teachers are in charter schools and in these districts of innovation, but I would take an educated guess that it's still there's more certified teachers than there are non-certified teachers in those schools.
But to say that if a teacher loses their teaching certificate because they were caught by the TEA having an inappropriate relationship with a student, and they had to either they were had the certificate taken from them or they surrendered it willingly, they're still able to teach in Texas?
Theoretically, they could, but you would think that these school officials would do their due diligence and run background checks and gather all the information they would need to get a good picture of that teacher's background and decide from that whether they should hire them or not.
If a teacher voluntarily surrenders their teaching certificate, is there some sign of that? What they did that background check, would it show up that they had an inappropriate relationship in the past?
So what you would have to do, I mean, one of the first steps for any member of the public, not just for a school district, is that they can first go to the State Board of Educator Certification website and type in the teacher's name and find the teacher's name and see if they have a sanction on their license. If it was revoked, it'll say revoked. If it was suspended, it'll say suspended, and so on. But then from there, in order to find further information, it usually involves public information requests if you're a member of the public. If you're a hiring district, it could be a little bit easier. But it is following up and making sure you get their personnel files. But then even in personnel files, I found cases where those inappropriate relationships or inappropriate misconduct, not even full-blown relationships with misconduct, isn't noted in personnel files. And sometimes, yeah, they can slip under the radar. And that's what we've now labeled passing the trash, where a teacher who has had misconduct in their history then goes on to another school district.
And that's a school district inside of Texas. If they move to another state, what about then?
Again, I would think that you go through the same process as your school district outside the state to go look for that information. But, I mean, each state does things a little bit differently, so we don't know if they could go on to go teach at another state. I've read reports of that happening as well.
So when we talk about this situation, I try to keep in mind that the highest priority is protecting the students. That's really what this is all about. If that's really what we're about here, are we doing everything that we can? Julie, you just told me about several ways in which teachers who have a history of inappropriate relationships with students can slip through the cracks and get back into the classroom.
It can happen, but I'm not sure that it's happening all the time. And if you look at the statistics, I mean, we're talking about 350,000 teachers in the state of Texas, and we're talking about then, you know, 400 of those teachers being accused of improper relationship. That's a fraction of a percent. So, you know, one case is one too many, but it's not happening all the time everywhere across the state.
So Paul Tapp, Managing Attorney for the Association of Texas Professional Educators. I mean, do you see this as, I mean, it's been described as by state lawmakers as a plague in the state? Are we at a crisis point here?
I think, and I want to go back and just clarify some from the earlier discussion. There are prohibitions on a school district hiring someone with criminal history, including obviously criminal history regarding relationship with a student in any position, whether they're certified or not. So there are some ways that a school district is not allowed to do that, even if they don't require certification. There are some ways that they could slip through if it is one where it was they lost their certificate because they engaged in something that was inappropriate but not criminal. That could be an issue, and that was one that we raised when they started allowing non-certified people in the classroom. But to go back to your question about how big of an issue this is, I don't think anyone considers this normal. It's certainly something that needs to be addressed. Like Julie said, we're talking about a very, very small percentage of teachers, students that have these kinds of relationships. What can we do to make it go away entirely? That's kind of that's the million-dollar question, of course. Prohibition has not worked entirely. You know, you would think, and certainly the legislature did, that by making it a felony, that will make this go away. It didn't do it. So we need to look at what else can we do to, you know, to reduce these numbers. Again, I've talked about education being a really important one. Finding out why, you know, why is it that teachers who know that this is prohibited, know the consequences of doing it, but still engage in it? Why is it that that happens? I have my own theories about that, but I'm certainly not the scientist that can say what the real reason is.
We got an anonymous email from a listener, says, I think girls should dress more appropriately. My children go to Alamo Heights. There's a dress code there. It is not enforced. And the email goes on to explain things, saying that they're dressing very provocatively. That seems to be sort of a blame the victim kind of mentality, Julie Chang. This is really, it's on the teachers, isn't it?
And, you know, I've through reporting on this, I've heard the same argument made. And you know, I would say to that one should consider the idea that they are blaming the victim, in that a person like a teacher who's in the position of power should not be, you know, trying to develop a relationship with a student regardless of how she's dressing. And this happens both ways. This happens with male students and female teachers. So that argument that the anonymous sender has sent sort of falls through.
And they say sometimes that the student is the aggressor. Paul Tapp, do you all talk to your educators and tell them you got to be aware of this and this can end your career, end your life?
Absolutely. That is absolutely an issue. One of the things that the legislature did that we really appreciated was the last session, they required school districts to adopt an electronic communications policy. Most districts had it already, but again, required them to do it. One of the provisions that they were required to include in that is, what is an educator supposed to do when they receive an inappropriate communication? Because it isn't always one way. It does go both ways. And, you know, that.
So does the teacher report that? If they get some sort of text, whatever, from a student or.
No, we certainly advise that. Of course, we advise that. It gets complicated depending on the content, because to be perfectly frank, sometimes those communications can be considered child pornography, which again, the educator hasn't had any, you know, responsibility for getting it, but all of a sudden they have it in their possession, which of course is a serious crime itself. It can be complicated. That's one reason, again, why we really appreciate the fact that it has put districts in a position of needing to think about this and needing to actually give guidance to the teachers of what do you do in these situations. You know, the most important thing I always tell people is tell someone.
Right. And don't spend any alone time with any students. Julie Chang, anything coming up in the next legislative session? Do you think this is going to be on Governor Abbott's agenda again?
I think that the bill that was passed last legislative session had lots of measures in it that, you know, I could see the state waiting for to see how those measures play out, how they affect the trend, and then go from there. I mean, there's just so much that needs to be done next legislative session that I'm not sure if it will take as high of a priority as last session.
All right. Julie Chang, staff writer for the Austin American Statesman. Paul Tapp is with us. He's the managing attorney for the Association of Texas Professional Educators. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.